All right, folks, welcome to this episode of the Jackson Lucas Impact Real Estate Podcast. Today is just me, Chris Papa, and Julio, the producer. Hi, Julio. Julio says hi. Today, I spoke with Steve Lefkowitz. Steve is a multifamily technology investor, advisor, and promoter. I met Steven through ULI. He is the Technology and Real Estate Product Council Chair for the Gold Flight. He lives in the Bay Area. He's also a partner at RealtyCom Partners, which works as a consulting firm with multifamily owners regarding their telecom needs. Just an overall real estate technology expert who gave us a pretty granular level information regarding how technology has affected multifamily real estate and how it is going to affect multifamily real estate. So amazing listen, great guy. And with that, as always, please, if you like the podcast, let us know. Rating and reviewing is always helpful. And please message us any questions you have and forward along the podcast to any friends or family who you think may get value out of it. And with that, have a great weekend. Steve Lefkowitz, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Are you kidding me? Thanks so much, Chris. It's great to be here.
How's your Friday, March 15th, going?
It's going great. You know, we got the energy of spring, and it's a beautiful day here in the Bay Area, so I'm optimistic.
It's gorgeous out today. It's gorgeous. I walked down to the coffee shop this morning and with a jacket on. And the time I came, was walking back, jacket was off. It was great.
Beautiful spring day. We're
both in the Bay Area.
Beautiful spring day.
Are you from the Bay Area?
I'm from San Francisco. I grew up in San Francisco, went to high school in San Francisco. Still see my buddies from middle school on the street. I love being from here.
Oh, cool. I am not from here. But so we met because I was... you're the head of the Technology and Real Estate Product Council, the Gold Flight Chair. And I was trying to get, what is it called? Audit that class. No, what's it called?
Guess.
I was trying to guess that council at the ULI spring event. And you said, no. No, I'm kidding. You didn't say that. But so you're the technology guy, the real estate technology guy. You sit on a number of different boards. You seem like a man of many talents, but you're also a partner in RealtyCom Partners, which is a 25-person consulting firm. Tell me about who you are, what you do, and how are you involved in the real estate world?
How am I involved in the real estate world? So I'm a part owner in a couple of businesses that serve multifamily business. One business is Joshua Tree Conference Group. We own the Apartment Innovation and Marketing Conference, a long-running conference in multifamily. And it started out as a conference that was just focused on internet marketing. It's grown to include all technology and innovation for some of the more, I would call more engaged and innovative multifamily owners and managers. And my other business, my partners and I own RealtyCom Partners, which is I believe is the multifamily industry's largest telecommunications advisor. We advise multifamily owners on almost every aspect of the telecommunications networks that go into their properties and how they're used and how they can be made to service the community in better and different ways. As well as monetized. So it's really, I think both businesses are sort of an outcropping of the discovery many years ago when I worked at the National Multi-Housing Council that I liked networking. And it's just been an opportunity for me to sort of put my personality into action and help disparate people solve problems and have fun and do something that they can't necessarily do, which is find ways to bring the best practices from one place to another place and try to make the whole industry better all at the same time.
Yeah. So you, telecommunications part, that's something I never actually ever think about. I'm sure a lot of people don't think about. It just kind of comes with the property. Like, so a developer or owner will hire you and say, I need to, like, what are the sort of hurdles people need to get over or the problems they face that they will come to you and say, hey, can you help us fix this?
Sure. The primary problem is just getting a handle on what is in the telecommunications agreements that you might inherit when you buy a property. Those agreements are complex. They might be with any one of 10 different service providers or 15 different service providers nationwide. And they say different things and have different terms. And they have different implications for the property, particularly in terms of what infrastructure they currently have, who pays for the infrastructure, what they can aspire to in the future. So that's one line of business, is sort of rationalizing that and working with the owners on their strategies for their buildings and for their residents and what they want to build on top of it. And the second piece of that is in new construction. We advise developers and construction companies and architects on telecommunications infrastructure. And then we oversee its installation. We do the project management. We do the QA work to make sure it gets installed correctly. And project manage the whole timeline for that and the additional devices that might get connected to a network, like smart building gear or electric car chargers or self-touring stuff. All of that, you know, falls along the critical path that depends on the network. And so we help oversee and make sure all of that's in and working, as well as the critical life safety equipment. So it's a little bit of engineering. It's a little bit, you know, certainly more technical than I was when I started out in the business. But it's a really fun path to understanding how people think about the user experience, how they think about the future, and how they think about how much of a good stakeholder steward they want to be, depending on whether, you know, it's a merchant build or something they're building for themselves for the long-term hold. So
you mentioned it's changed a lot since you know a lot more technology than before before you started. How did you get into this world? How did you get into real estate?
Well, I mean, my first job, I was a news photographer. I worked for USA Today. And
oh, wow.
I did that for 4 years right out of college, and it was a great experience. And it actually turned out to be very relevant, because we were, at the time, I believe, the first newspaper that used satellite transmission to transmit images. And we used precursors to the internet to transmit data. And so we used to carry these 30-pound data transmitters with us to transmit pictures, and we'd have to call AT&T to order an ISDN line, which was a state-of-the-art 56K line. And, you know, because of that, when I got to the National Multi-Housing Council, I was overconfident when they said, hey, we're starting to look at cable television and telecommunications. I said, oh, I know all about that, because I've called AT&T a couple of times. And because of that, you know, I knew more than my boss knew at NMHC, so that put me in charge. And so I got to put on the first NMHC technology conference back in 1998. And from that, people started telling me things that actually were genuine education, and started to figure out how the pieces all pull together.
Well, how did you get from photographer to NMHC?
I went to graduate school and then got a job at Prudential Securities, financing of affordable housing, and then I worked for the New York State Housing Finance Agency, where my friends told me, hey, there's this trade association in D.C., and they're looking for a capital markets expert, but they don't want to pay someone from Wall Street. You seem like a nice guy that understands this, but, you know, you're working for the state, maybe you're a perfect fit. And, you know, for me, the rest was history.
Did you have an interest in real estate?
Oh, very much so. I'd always wanted to be a developer. I really liked affordable housing. I liked the affordable housing mission. That's part of the reason I went to graduate school. So it was a real great opportunity to meet the people who were doing the things that I was interested in. Working for the Housing Finance Agency gave me some insights into the affordable housing business. And then I went to NMHC and found out there's this whole wider world of people that, you know, I would otherwise have no contact with.
And you had some technology exposure, and most people probably had no technology exposure, right? Or they had,
like, sure, it was 1997. I mean, literally, you know, knowing what 56K meant was like, well, that was good. I could riff on that for an hour. So
you were the expert.
I was the expert. I mean, it's not too much. I mean, I literally had a Cat 3 wire splicer that I used at USA Today, and I would sometimes bring it to meetings at NMHC to show people what was inside of a phone wire, and they thought I was, you know, not a genius, but
yeah,
pretty good. So, I mean, I didn't tell them it was from Radio Shack, you know?
Yeah. And so what, I mean, real estate is notorious or kind of, I mean, we live in the Bay Area, there's a lot of technology folks, you know, they don't often overlap with real estate. I mean, they do in some sense, like with the internet and all that type of stuff. But real estate's usually, people say, oh, they're so far behind in their technology. What are the big changes you've seen over the last, you know, since 1997?
Some things don't change, right? The technology has to be solving a problem, and it has to be accretive to the real estate. That hasn't changed. What has changed is that there's so much more capital for technology that there's so many different forms of innovation that are coming at us. I mean, when I started, the big problem was that the cable TV companies would not serve apartment renters. They thought that they weren't worthwhile customers.
Oh, really?
So,
wow.
You know, we've come a long way in that was an industry-wide problem. And if you talk to people, you know, throughout the apartment-owning states, they'd say, boy, we'd really like to get cable TV. And this would be a consuming technology problem. I mean, it sounds funny today, especially because the environment has changed so much where we now think, you know, internet is a basic human right. You know, at the time, it wasn't long ago when presidents of telecom companies would get up and say, I'll never serve apartment renters. They're bad credit risks. I don't want them as customers. And people would cheer.
You know, so. Wow.
That's changed. But, you know, the in a larger sense, the thing that's changed is there's so many opportunities for creativity and so many different ways to solve problems. And it used to be there were just a few people who would try to solve problems. You know, there'd be someone from Equity Residential, be someone from Camden, Avalon Bay, and they could kind of speak for the industry and try to solve big problems and talk to really big companies. And there would be sort of giant meets giant, and that would be how a solution might or might not be hashed out. Today, we've got venture capital promoting dozens, if not hundreds, of possible solutions to problems that are out there. So that's a real big change. You know, one other big change is that 30 years ago, let's say, the apartment industry went through a great professionalization of management. And when I got there around 27 years ago, there was still very much a feeling of relief. People would say, hey, you know, we used to be managed by ma and pa, and now we hired a professional management company, and they're going to do things like survey our residents. For the first time, we can have insights into what our customers think. And, you know, there were still some people who said, boy, I got into this business because I don't want to know what my customers think. But, you know, today you just don't find that. Today, you know, everyone, the apartment business is super competitive. Everyone surveys their residents. Everyone takes pretty seriously what the residents say, and they want to, you know, include that information in not just in how they lease, but in their investment decision. So, you know, I'd say that's a real big difference. And then, you know, the cell phone has democratized access to technology. So whatever role apartment owners had in providing a centralized place for technology in the past is probably diminished because we all have a technology hub in our pocket. So that's really changed. And, you know, even the people who have access to the capital to innovate, you know, like there was a project that recently went up in Tempe, Arizona, a carless project called Cul-de-Sac. And I had occasion to talk to these guys a couple of times and realized these guys are building an investment size, investment grade multifamily project, but they got their capital from venture capital that wanted to experiment with a better way of living, a carless experience, increasing density, both for a great resident experience, but also so that they could bring centralized amenities to the residents, like restaurants and other services. That's new. You know, you never would have seen that before. There was never differentiated capital like that available before. So there's definitely a lot of things going on that you know, make it no longer one monolithic apartment experience.
What have you seen? Was there like innovations around when people started working from home a lot more? I mean, 2020, you know, the COVID, I have a friend that worked at a, you know, large internet company and, or data center company, actually. It was like just stretching the internet, you know, to the point. Like, was there a lot of innovation around that?
100%.
Had to adapt to on the fly?
You know, the apartment industry very much had to find ways to adapt to making sure that wherever you were, you could still get to view an apartment if you wanted to rent one. They wanted to make sure that you could interact without having to come into the building lobby. And we recognized that, you know, we sort of created a new class of renter in the, what do we call them? The people that travel, people who can work from anywhere, and there's sort of a new class of renter. You know, we have the renter by need, renter by choice, and now we, you know, I've got COVID brain. I can't remember what we call them, but I think that's a big change in the customer. But you know, to be forced into automating the leasing experience and to be able to give people trusted access into a community, to be able to interact with them, to be able to automate the functions of the leasing agent, because I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to put you in touch with them physically. That's a huge deal, and it's really reshaped the industry. It's driven the awareness that we can centralize a lot of operations in multifamily and provide a better, more consistent communications experience as a result, and not center every last task around the apartment community when we can probably do it less expensively from a centralized place. And probably if I have one person working on certain aspects of customer experience, if I have one person working on collections or one person working on leasing insurance, that person spread across 10 or 20 communities can be a much more senior person who has much more experience and better skills and can provide a better customer value than trying to train people on site to do all the digital nomads. Think about digital nomads as our third tribe of renters. So that's a real big change. And so you're seeing it right now in terms of staffing. You know, no one likes staffing reductions. At the same time, the hottest buzzword in multifamily technology is centralization, because of all the things I just said. And also, it probably can save a lot of companies a decent amount of money to use web technology to service more people more efficiently, more consistently. You know, that's new, right? And I don't think that's changing.
Do you see it happening in affordable housing too? Are you still involved with that at all?
You know, I'm not as involved in affordable housing. You know, the leasing can take longer, the approvals, the verifications, et cetera. But I think there's the same impetus. I think there's also the same impetus around better marketing. You know, paradoxically, many affordable communities have a high rate of vacancy, and trying to find efficiencies that lead to faster leasing, whether it's in customer attraction or working with a housing authority, if there's a housing authority involved. I do think that there's a lot of energy there. It's just that it's from a technology investment standpoint, it's a more niche market. It's a smaller addressable market. It's probably not as interesting to most venture capital. But you do see entrepreneurs stepping up saying, boy, this is a really good lifestyle business for me if I can figure out how to solve this problem for, you know, the owners of 3 million affordable units. You know, I'm still going to be in a wonderful position.
Right. I mean, so how would somebody, I mean, in real estate folks, yeah, there's a lot more. I mean, there's venture funds, there's, you know, all these, some of these owners, big owners are investing into technology companies to try to figure out, you know, get efficiencies with their own portfolio as well. And what are the best resources for someone to stay up to date? Like, there's so many different options, it feels like, in all the different like real estate technologies. Like, I just see new ones coming all the time. Like, how do you know which is why do some get adopted and others don't?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually had a webinar this morning about why some technologies get adopted and why some don't.
Oh, darn, I should have went on the webinar.
It's really very insightful. We had a panel of multifamily owner representatives talking about this topic. I don't think it's a matter so much of keeping up. I think right now there's more technology companies and more possibilities than the industry can buy. And there are a few classifications of reasons why some make it and some don't. Number one, and the overarching one, is this: is it a solution to a problem that we already have? So it's really easy to create things that can be used, but that makes it very hard to sell. And it used to be, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, someone would come to my office and say, hey, I've got this new technology I'm doing for multifamily. And I'd always ask the same thing, which was, you know, with all due respect, who in the industry asked you to be here? And did they sign an agreement in advance to buy your tech? And they go, no, but it's really cool. I go, you know what? No, just no. If it's not a compelling problem and you're not making people direct money, it's going to be really hard. It's going to be really hard to sell. So the answer to your question is, one is there a compelling problem that people already know that they have and they talk about? And if you solve that, so for example, one of the most successful young tech companies in multifamily, is a company called Checkpoint ID that solved the problem of verifying renter identifications and evaluating documents. Everyone was talking about everyone at the bar would say, boy, we've had terrible fraud, people ripped us off, blah, blah, blah. So when you already know you have that costly problem and people are either ripping you off or they're moving in and squatting and then forcing you to pay them $25,000 to get out, you know you have a real issue. So Checkpoint ID was a huge hit because they addressed a compelling problem that everyone had that were willing to pay a modest subscription fee to solve. I think the answer to how do you keep up with it, it just depends on what your role is in the industry. If you're a property owner, I don't think you need to keep up with all of it. You probably just need to make a list of your 7 most pressing problems you think are controllable and try to keep up with that. And beyond that, I think if you're someone who wants to do seed stage investments, I think like you could join the PropTech Angels group, Matt Knight's group. The PropTech Angels is a great way to stay on top of everything that's coming while it's early and hearing from CEOs and hearing from your peers about what they're doing. But there are probably fewer strategic seed stage investors now than there were 5 years ago, you know, so it's probably a smaller cohort. And then, you know, if you're looking from a competitive positioning standpoint, everyone wants attention who's getting into that role. So, you know, very simple things can keep track of what's going on, like setting up a Google search that just alerts you whenever certain key terms come up. I mean, it's really super effective. And then, you know, the other thing is...
Or they can call you.
Well, yeah, they certainly call us, but you know, going to conferences, and certainly, you know, that's one of the reasons that we do our conference, is to allow people to get up to speed, stay up to speed, and talk to their peers about what has worked over the past year and is a certain thing worth doing. You know, our conference is every spring, first week of May in Huntington Beach at the Big Hyatt on the beach. And probably half of what people do is compare notes about innovation. And to me, you know, the nuance is when someone says, well, it worked for me, but I'm a third-party manager, and it worked for us with our process because I'm looking asset by asset, and I have to talk to each owner individually anyway. And someone else says, well, you know, we own 300 properties, and we have our own internal process of bringing stakeholder involvement, and it didn't work so well for us because our process is around an annual meeting where we get together and set our priorities so we don't deviate, you know. Hearing those nuances, so product might work, but it might not have worked for that group for a specific reason that someone might tell you in person that they won't tell you electronically, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Wow, that's an awesome conference. What do you predict? Like you're talking about EV charging. what else are you seeing? Like, or what's happening over the next couple of years that we're at the kind of at the beginning of?
Well,
are we going to be all automated cars? No more garages and multifamily properties?
I don't think the automated garage per se. I mean, there are automated car parkers, of course. We all know how many different sectors of the multifamily industry there are. So if we're looking at, urban properties in our area, Chris, I can look out the window and I see four electric cars just through my 24 feet of frontage. So I'm in a condo building that has 160 people and there are probably 20 electric cars in the garage. So
yeah.
I know in our area, and I live in a part of Oakland that probably, I'm going to guess, 10% of the cars are Teslas. So, we know that electric car charging is part of our future. I'd say consumer technology is hard to predict and owners hate to invest in it because of what happened with the iPod docking stations 15 years ago. We've all learned our lesson that fixed infrastructure actually changes. I think that there's a very strong movement towards automating access and access credentials and giving people access through their phone. It's a no-brainer. Everyone wants it. You know, even the legacy companies are changing to app-based access. And, smart devices, smart experiences in general. But I think a lot of the technology that's going to remain sticky is going to be stuff that's building infrastructure that's used for analyzing properties. It's going to be used for providing a better experience, or infrastructure that's shared between property owner and resident, or stuff around energy. You know, one of the really hot areas right now is around climate change. And if I don't know if you've seen in the press lately, there's been a lot of press around heat pump technology. And it's being driven by the requirement in New York City to change to all electric buildings. Last week, the Wall Street Journal did an article about, what was it called, the world's most watched apartment office building. It's in Hines Building in New York City, 17 stories, 100 years old. They're switching to a reservoir-based heat pump. Now, the cost savings and the green benefits of heat pumps probably make heat pump adoption, the number one technology long-term, but it's not consumer-facing and it's not super exciting in the way that something that you can hold in your hand. So you probably won't hear people talk about it as much, but I think you'll see everyone on the building side of multifamily king in heat pumps. And certainly if I were going to invest, in the next 3 months in an early stage, I'd probably invest in some heat pump technology or probably a heat pump integrator. Because there'll be an almost insatiable demand for that technology going forward as more and more jurisdictions compel electrification. The regulatory environment will make it inevitable that everyone shifts to the technology.
You heard it here first, folks. Heat pumps.
Heat pumps.
What about, we had a mandate we filled with a large owner, operator, investor. They wanted to get more into data analytics to help with like their investing. And then I spoke to another firm, which is more of a data analytics firm that overlaid real estate on top of it more. So and said like, it's so hard to, it's hard to be like a real estate firm with data analytics. You need to be a data analytics firm with real estate that does some real estate. What do you think about data analytics entering the space?
I mean, I think what your contact said, I think has some merit to it. I think if you're looking from an investment standpoint, but I also think it's simplified, and I'll tell you why. I think it's relatively easy if you're data people and you have a thesis and you have the capability and the CEO knows how the data works. You can build an investment thesis around data and you can stick to it and you can sell it. I think it's much harder if your stock and trade has always been, hey, I get some retail investors together, I do a club deal, I find some building, I get them into it, and I make sure that they get their K-1s on time. If you ask that guy to suddenly be a data-based investor, it's going to be hard for him to give the pitch, and it's going to be, frankly, hard for his investors to believe him. If you're looking on the operations side of the business, though, I think it's different, and I think that what we are seeing is both adoption of data analytics for efficiencies, for pricing, for evaluation of amenities, to look at to use business intelligence to determine all kinds of problems and opportunities. You know, I'm on the board of a company called Real Estate Business Analytics, led by Donald Davidoff, and he was the head of revenue management and marketing at Archstone many years ago. And I think, you know, the arc of his career is really an example of, actually, data analytics is only increasingly important to multifamily, both operationally or operational and asset management and on the investment side. And I think that's only going to grow in different ways. I mean, you know, you referenced our ULI product council, the Technology and Real Estate Council. One of our members, Tom Foley, is the CEO of a data analytics company called Archer, but they use data analytics to determine they use data analytics and AI to do very rapid property underwriting, and also to determine the propensity of a seller to be interested in selling. And so, you know, I think for a while everyone looked at operational data and said, oh, you know, it has limited value. But it, to me, the proof of the pudding and what Archer's doing is in their customer base, and I know it's public that they just did a deal with Marcus & Millichap. Marcus & Millichap agreed, and Marcus & Millichap is putting them in place as their primary data analytics platform and underwriting engine because it helps them do business faster. So it's difficult to dispute the value of that. I mean, the guys at Marcus & Millichap know a lot more about it than I do. And if they're betting their professional reputations on this data analytics technology, then it probably works.
That's awesome. Well, Stephen, it's a very comfortable temperature in the Bay Area, but are you ready to enter the hot seat?
Always.
The Hot Seat is sponsored by KK Reset. KK Reset is an HR management and outsourcing consulting firm that specializes in helping organizations to reset their culture, structure, and path. They do this through services which include comprehensive consultation to identify gaps and opportunities for corporate training programs, HR services, and career mapping services. They've collaborated with nonprofits, startups, and academic organizations to protect them from liabilities, reduce turnover, and preserve their brand. They have also collaborated with a number of my clients on the real estate front who are not large enough to have their own in-house HR program, so they outsource it to KK Reset. KK Reset comes in, maybe sits on site a couple days a week, and provides, you know, everything you need from an HR perspective for your firm. So it's a great resource for those shops who just maybe it doesn't make sense for them to have in-house HR function. So please check them out at kkreset.com, kkreset.com.
You're ready. I can see it. Do you have a book or podcast recommendation?
I do. I'm a big fan of an author named Candace Millard, and she's written several fantastic history books, and one of them was called Destiny of the Republic, about the life of James Garfield, who probably was our last amateur American hero. And there's a Netflix series coming out about based on the book. It is probably the best structured, best paced book of history I've ever read. I highly recommend it. Everyone pick it up. Destiny of the Republic.
What's it called?
Destiny of the Republic.
Wow. I love history. All right, cool. Do you have I find that most people, you're a pretty successful guy. I mean, you're a leader on your field. You're like, do you have any sort of specific routine, daily routine or morning routine, anything that you follow every day?
Yeah, I do the New York Times spelling bee and then the connections puzzle just to make sure my brain is still working while I'm having my first cup of coffee. And if I can do them, then I feel like it's going to be a good day.
The connections puzzle is kind of hard.
It's just a matter of nuance. You got to think like they think.
I try. Believe me. Which mentors have had the most impact on you?
I've had such great mentors. Some of my favorites, very close to still my friend Fred Cavan. Fred was an investment banker who took a lot of the REITs public. A lot of old timers will remember Fred. Fred's been a great mentor. is an accountant by training and a finance guy who really taught me the value of thinking very clearly about the numbers in real estate. I had a wonderful mentor at the National Multi-Housing Council. Both of my bosses were great mentors to me, Clarin Nardi Riddle, who was Senator Lieberman's chief of staff for many years, and Jonathan Kempner, the CEO of NMHC that helped grow that business, was just fantastic. And I had a finance professor in graduate school named Uwe Reinhardt, who taught us to think around finance and accounting. And he told stories with accounting, and it really has translated into how I approach looking at real estate and real estate problems in a way that, you know, probably people that went to business school probably didn't get. So I certainly credit him. And, you know, even, you know, going back to my photography days, I was an intern at the New York Times the summer, my junior year between junior and senior year of college. And I'd say probably basically half of the New York Times photo staff took me under their wing and realized, you know, I had no idea what it meant to work in a blue collar job and to really have an ethic of hard physical work that required you to keep your brain on for 12 hours a day. So I credit all of them.
Awesome. Actually, and do you have any advice for young folks trying to get into this industry and be, you know, look up to you as the next Stephen Lefkowitz?
Take accounting classes. You know, I think real estate is an account. Real estate is just a big ledger, right? It's an accounting exercise, and everything that the business is all about finance and accounting. And so, you know, we see a lot of people on the operations side of the business who say, oh, I got into operations because I wasn't good in school. And you need to go back to school and you need to understand the accounting, because everything else is words. And if you don't control the numbers, you're never really going to be a part of the strategic discussion in real estate.
That is great advice. Well, Stephen, it's great to get to know you better. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Chris, thanks so much for having me. And, you know, I think you forgot to ask me like the key question that anyone that's around hiring should be asking right now.
Who's hiring?
Well, no one's hiring. But part of the reason they're not hiring is because of AI. I think, you know, the other piece of the advice I would give to young people.
I'm trying to stay away from AI because I'm afraid.
Well, no, but, you know, honestly, in all seriousness, I think that, you know, if I were in your position, I'd have an intern looking at, hey, should we be looking at either candidates who excel at using AI to get answers, or are there certain functions where we should be trying to source companies that can do things with AI where people have trouble hiring en masse, like bookkeeping? You know, could that be a part of your practice going forward?
Well, don't give away my secrets, Stephen. We are well entrenched in all that exploratory work. We're doing that, you know, a lot of our business is research, and beyond the search aspect of it, we do a lot of research in different ways, parts of real estate. And yeah, we're getting heavily involved in figuring out that and vetting different companies to work with and figuring out maybe how we can do it ourselves possibly. So it is, yeah, we see it happening, and we want to be at the forefront of it as well.
I love it. So you're going to be a technologist.
But don't tell anybody.
It's too late. Where's that? Thank you so much for having me.